All right, thank you very much. Like you said, my name is Dean Hunsucker. I do work with Five Stones Camp, Good News Ministries. We take 40 inner-city teenage boys. We bring them out of the inner city, move them to a camp facility for 40 days and 40 nights in the summertime. They live there for 6 weeks, and through that time, they're taken from the streets of Indianapolis into three chapels a day, two devotions a day, and countless other kind of Bible study events. And so we have them for 6 weeks, and wow, when that is done, we usually have a distinctly different product, or we have a few less kids. Depends on how that works out. At the end of that, we select 10 to 15 of those boys to come and be part of our Christian boarding school. They come and live with us for 9 months out of the year. Currently, we have 10 kids in our school. I've been working for Good News Ministries off and on, depends on when you started counting, either 10 years straight or 20 years overall. And I've been dealing with inner city or troubled teens most of that time. Now, I'll say this. I said it started my last session with this. We need to clarify what a troubled teen is, because I think a lot of times we have our this gangster vision in our mind. That's a troubled teen and how we're going to help them. To be honest, I've never met a troubled. I've never met a teen that wasn't troubled, ever. Okay? Think back to when you were a teenager. Were you not troubled? Maybe you weren't brazen enough to do it on the outside so that everybody saw it, but in your heart, in your mind, in your confusion, in all of this, there's a trouble that's there. Now, why? Because if Satan can kill our teen spiritually in those few years there, he's killed an adult forever. So he comes after our kids harder. He gets a little meaner. He has dirtier tactics. And so these teenagers, even if you don't see it, a lot of them are fighting on the inside. So the thing we're looking at today, they once again, I was assigned these titles. I think I was just being generalized. I think, what was it say? It says something like, investing in and mentoring the troubled teen. We're going to talk about that. But I think not many people in here need a lesson on investing in and mentoring troubled teens, because I think troubled teens and teens are the same category. How do you invest in or mentor in them? Well, it comes with time. Okay? So we all understand it takes time. If you're going to do it spiritually, it takes the Bible. So you take the Bible, you spend time with the kid, you pray with the kid, you mentor them. It takes a lot of time. The more troubled they are, it takes more time. I'm firmly convinced there is no such thing as a lost cause, just a lost kid. Matter of fact, I'm also convinced that in order to reach that lost kid, you need more love and more time. That's all you need. If, by the way, you do not reach that kid with more love and more time, guess what you need to do? Add more love and more time. And when they're 25 and they're still messed up, guess what you need to do? More love and more time. Because God's, we're not allowed to give up. We don't get to know where the finish line is. That kid can be 30, 32, 35, 40 years old. And guess what? More love and more time. That's what we're called to do. We don't get an option to back out. However we exercise that option, that's what I want to talk about today, is why don't we invest in and mentor troubled teens? It's real easy to minister to the pastor's kid. Super, super easy. The kid's usually cool. His hard exterior, you can elbow him and you'll be the one that gets in there because you're the youth worker. You're like the cool uncle or a crazy aunt. You know, you can get in there and get away with things that maybe mom and dad can't. And so you have this in with them. And so that's pretty simple. It's harder than normal sometimes, but you know how to do these things. But when it comes to the difficult kid, the one that's even difficult to be around, the one that's difficult to even carry a conversation with. I've got a kid in our school right now who refuses to look at, shake a hand of, or even speak to one of our teachers. Now, I've had the conference with him. We had the sit down. We shared Bible verses. We appealed to both his heart and his flesh. Punishment's coming, right? And I said, now listen, you have to at least acknowledge a good morning and shake his hand. You have to pay attention in class. He is your teacher. And if you don't do this, the punishments are coming. In our school, you have to write sentences like you did when you were in elementary. Teenagers hate it, by the way. So if you ever a teen, sentences is hateful. They hate it, hate it, hate it. So I make them write sentences. And I said, so this is coming. You need to be changing your attitude. You understand that I'm raising the punishment for you, and I'm going to do this because I want to see a change in action. And he said, okay. And I said, all right, can I expect the change? And he goes, well, I'll be ready for it. I said, ready for what? I guess I'm going to be writing a lot of sentences. No, no, we go back to the beginning of the conversation. We do the whole thing again, and we don't get anywhere. I mean, it feels like I'm fighting against the wind. It feels like I'm throwing punches that aren't landing. It feels like I'm trying to grab after a kid who's actively running away. And I can see the kids in our program, they are the future prodigal. They might be touchable now, but they won't be in the next chance they get. Right? And so you want desperately just to grab them and throat punch them and make them stop and listen and say, no, you have to do the right thing because I care enough. Right? But you can't throat punch kids. It's against the rules. Just so you know. Don't write that down, throat punch kids. But what can you do? Well, you can love them. Well, okay, if it just takes love and it just takes time, why aren't we investing in and mentoring in the troubled teen? I'll tell you why. It hurts. It hurts. And suffering is not something we choose to do. I mean, unless something's wrong with you, suffering is not something you choose to do. I have a hobby that is very unique, and people would say that I choose to suffer in my hobby. I don't know how many of you know this. I'm what's called an ultra runner. Now, I'm weird. See, normal people, they run 5Ks. They do. They got a little cause they like to do. They get out with the kids. They buy some tennis shoes at Kohl's. And they go running with their 30% off sneakers. And they're out for their 5K. Woo-woo! And that's awesome. Congratulations, that's awesome. I think people should do it. I really do. And then you got the crazy folks out there who are like, I'm signing up for the Indy Mini. I'm doing 13.1 and nobody's going to stop me. And then you got the full-on crazies. I'm talking, these people got no sense, they got no time, they got no life. And they go and run the full marathon. It's the 26.2 miles, right? At the end of these races, their legs are cramped up, they're having trouble walking, they're sore for weeks. I'm an ultra runner, so we start out at like 50 miles, and we go all the way up to 100, 200, and 300 miles at a time. I finished a race in October that was a 100-mile race point-to-point. You start in this city, and you run through trails, like through the woods, to this city 100 miles away. And this is what I do for fun. So people say, you must enjoy suffering. No, I hate suffering. I really, really do. But I love running. It's just the two go hand in hand. They pair, okay? And so I'm not into, like, beating my body down. But I am into going out there and stretching myself and pushing it. Why? Because I love the feeling of crossing the finish line. I love the feeling of knowing that I've worked towards this goal and I've finally reached it. I love the feeling of looking back, and I can still remember, you're so injured by the time you get done that you don't really move a lot. So me and my wife got a hotel room, and I literally just laid there. They had a couch. And I laid there like this. It was this big old grin on my face. She said, what in the world? I said, I can't believe I just ran 100 miles. This is crazy. Crazy. Now, I love that. Maybe I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie without the bravery of jumping off a building or something. But I loved that. Why? Because that's what I was interested in. That was what my desire was. That's where my heart was. Now, I do run for a little bit of a weird reason. I've got Lyme's disease, which means a little tick bit me, and now I sweat, and I have chills, and I have flu-like symptoms. I've got arthritis pains. I have heart palpitations that will make me pass out, you know, from sweating. I've got issues that go beyond issues. However, when I run, they go away. So I run a lot, right? So for my own health, I like to run. I also eat very funny foods that nobody should ever be forced to eat in order to make sure that my body works, and so that I can function, so that I can stand up here and talk. Now, the plus side to me is so great that I'll suffer through what's weird about ultra running as your mind goes to spaces they should never go. I can remember I was running. It's about 7:30 at night, and my brain said, you've been running since 7:30 this morning, and you're just halfway. And I'm going, And your body starts hitting you with all these negative ideas. If you just stop now, nobody will judge you. It's fine. Nobody runs 50 miles. This is crazy. You can sit down. Go ahead and have a seat. Your wife's at the next stop. She can drive you to the finish line if you want. It's okay. Blah, blah, blah. All these negative things come up, right? And then on top of that negativity, they call it the black cloud. On top of all that, your body runs out of salt and sugar, and you can't eat fast enough. And so you start to hallucinate, and your stomach doesn't want to cooperate. Past 73 miles, I wasn't even able to put food in my mouth. I'd pick food up off a table, and I'd go, I physically could not put it in my mouth. I'm running down the trail, and I look down, and as I'm running, I'm seeing what I thought was a severed hand in the middle of the trail. And I'm telling you, nothing will make you stop like a severed hand in the middle of the trail. I'm running along. Let me be honest. I'm running along. And I come over the hill, and I look down, and I went, I'm looking. It's pitch black, by the way. It's like 4 in the morning. I'm wearing a headlamp. And all I can see is this severed hand laying in the middle of the road. And I got closer and closer. And I'm running out here in the dark in the woods. And somebody's got body parts laying around. This is not a place I should be. Scared to death. Next step by next step, I am petrified. But I keep taking steps forward, and I look. And I'm really trying to figure out why this severed hand's right there. And it is literally laying this far away from me as I'm leaned over looking at it, and my brain started connecting the dots. It was a corn husk. The red part of the corn had been, all the kernels had been eaten off, and the red was there, and the husk had been folded back like this. And at the angle it was, my brain was totally convinced that that was a severed hand, to the point where as I'm staring at it this far away, my mind was still seeing what I thought I was seeing, but not what I was actually seeing. You say, well, why would you put your body through that? I don't like Lyme's disease. I don't like shaking and falling over and not knowing why I'm passed out. I hate that. So I run. It works. Now, we're here today talking about why we would invest in and mentor inner city teens. Why we would invest in and mentor troubled teens. Why we would invest in and mentor bus kids. Why we would invest in and mentor hard Sunday school kids. Why we would invest in and mentor our own difficult children. Well, number one, it's got to be worth the suffering. The suffering is suffering because typically when we first start to suffer, it surprises us. The kids can hurt us in ways that nobody else can. Why? Because they're who we pour our lives into. I'm a youth pastor because of you. I'm a bus worker because I love you. I didn't take on the bus because I hate kids. I didn't become a parent because I hated kids. I didn't become a youth pastor because I hated kids. No, because the very opposite. I want to spend every waking moment of my life with kids. I want to pour my life into kids. I want to see them laugh. I want to see them have fun. I want to see them have their Bible devotions without being told. I want to see them grow to be pastors and preachers, missionaries, Sunday school teachers. I want to see them be the greatest parents in the world. Why? Because I love kids and I want to see them succeed. And then a kid does something that stabs you so deep and so hard. That you're done. I train counselors every year to come in and work with at-risk inner-city teen boys. And I don't know why, but in their brain, they get these little pictures of like the CEF kids you see, you know, like the poor kids with little tiny faces. And they're like, oh, I'm going to help these kids, and they're going to love Jesus. We're going to do Bible stories, and we're going to make balloon animals and do flannel graphs together all summer. Now, I tell them that's not the way it's going to be, but that's what they have in their mind. I'm going to witness. The kid's going to get saved, and we're going to walk arm in arm down the aisle as he becomes a missionary. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen that way. And so I tell them, you're going to get hurt. You're going to have pain. It's going to be hard. It's the worst summer of your life. Your heart's going to get ripped out, stomped on, and then they're going to expect you to do something nice for them again. But you got to love the kid enough that the suffering is worth it. Why? Because I also hate sin. And I hate what Satan is doing to these kids. And without somebody stepping in, mentoring and investing our teens, we are allowing Satan at the worst moment in these kids' life to come in and sift them like wheat and rip them apart, tear them to shreds. If we don't do something active, aggressive, and in their face, and don't worry about the suffering that's coming, the kids will fail. By the way, the good kids will too. I visit a lot of youth groups, I really do. I speak at a lot of different things, and I see youth pastors and bus workers and Sunday school teachers, and I see these kind of things. I see the interactions. Can I tell you, stop making your youth group, your bus ministry, stop making these things playgrounds and start making them greenhouses. We're trying to grow kids, not entertain them. Now, you can do both, but if you have to choose, you better grow them. You say, what do you mean, Dean? Here's what I mean. Be Christian without an excuse. Now we say, okay, that's confusing. I shouldn't need a tug-of-war game to help a kid learn the gospel. In other words, I don't need to entertain him for an hour to get 20 minutes of a sermon in. Right? You say, well, he won't come. Yeah, he will. You show that kid you care about him. You pour your life into him. You grab his hand and pray for him. You sit down with her one-on-one. And you say, look, I'm praying about you. I'm worried about you. Here's what I see in your life, and I'm deeply concerned about it. And I want you to know that I'm here for you. I'll be glad to show you in the Bible anything you need to know. But I want to see you succeed more than you want to see you succeed. That's how much it is. I wake up praying for you. I eat my lunch praying for you. I go to bed praying for you. I love you that much. Those kids, they'll come to show up to church and pray night. Why? Because you're there and you love them. Kids don't get on the bus for the candy. They get on the bus because of you. You may think it's the candy. Don't be fooled. They're coming because of you. You're the one that knocked on their door on Saturday. You're the one that called their house on Saturday night. You're the one that called back because they already forgot again on Saturday night. You're the one that showed up early on Sunday morning, knocked on the door and said, you're not ready, I'll be back in 10 minutes. Get ready. I know bus workers that go into houses, rattle the kids out of bed and make them breakfast. You say, no, you don't. Oh, yes, I do. Why? Because that kid's important. That same kid will do anything for you. That same kid, they might say, I don't like you. I hate you. But man, I would rather them hate me when I poured in all the time than hate me because I didn't pour in all the time. Suffering is difficult. Suffering is terrible. Suffering tends to surprise us. Let me tell you something. Don't be surprised when ungodliness acts ungodly. I'll say that again. Don't be surprised when ungodliness acts ungodly. We had a group of kids come. They're all from the bad neighborhood. They've all got no family structure at home. And they showed up and they used foul language. Now, does that need to be corrected? Yes. Should it make your jaw drop, your anger boil over with tons of repercussions? You're not coming to our church till you're 80. No. Because it shouldn't surprise you. We have knee-jerk reactions when we're surprised. And typically those knee-jerk reactions aren't great. So don't be surprised when ungodliness acts ungodly. Allow it to break your heart instead of blow your temper. Allow their sin to break your heart instead of blow your temper. See, if you make me mad, you cuss me out right now. Please don't. But if you had, I have an option. I can get angry. Now, here's what anger does. And I'm being honest. I grew up a pretty angry person. I don't know why. Maybe I got something wrong with me. Maybe it's my red hair. I'll blame it on the red hair. We got a couple of redheads in here. You could all just say, sure, why not? So, you make me mad. Now, I get angry. Well, anger is my defense. Anger stops me from suffering. Now, it doesn't, but I think it does. Can we relate? Now, let's think about it. They've made me mad. And instead of being broken over their sin, instead of crying on the inside, often the outside, over this young man's sin, over crying about the victory that Satan's having in his life right now, instead, I'm tough, I'm leather-skinned, I am ministry-bound, and I can do it because I am the king of youth groups. You don't know, I've been in bus ministry 10 years, kid. I can put up with your foul mouth. Now, you've never said that, but you've thought it. You may have said it. You don't understand, I'm tough enough to take you. Really? That kid's, oh yeah, I want to be just like her. Right? Now, think about it. Allow that sin to break our heart and not blow our temper. I hear you cuss, but the first reaction I have is, oh my, Satan has got a hold in this young man's life like never before. He requires more prayer. He requires more time. He requires more love. And I'm going to be the only person to give it to him because right now, he's probably not getting that at home. Because right now, there's nobody else investing in him to the point where that is not acceptable. Now, you don't know this. There might be 15 people investing every second of their day in him. He apparently needs more love and more time. Now you've been called to him. Now you see that need. You got a young lady who you find out is pregnant from another guy in the youth group or outside. Is she not just screaming calling card for help? But what typically happens? She gets pushed to the side because we don't want her to, you know, infect the other girls. We don't want her to infect the other guys. We can't have her infecting the youth group. She's now got some kind of leprosy. And so instead of pouring our life into them, we like, I'm praying for you, honey. We got a young man who's just, he's tearing his life up. He's going downhill hardcore. And so, you know, we decide that, you know, we're going to pray for him as a youth group. And we're going to do whatever we can for him. And yet, we don't sit down with that kid and pray for him one-on-one. We don't visit his home and express to him that we're deeply concerned, that we want to see him grow. Let him cuss you out. Suffering is normal. It's supposed to happen. I mean, just go Google suffering Bible. It'll happen, okay? We only have a few minutes, so I'm not trying to like dump all the verses on you, but I'm telling you right now, for I reckon that the suffering of this present world cannot be compared to the glory which will be revealed in us, okay? Honestly, this suffering is nothing compared to what God's got for us. And we would all agree with this. Oh, I'll suffer forever, right? But here's what typically happens. Isaiah 42, I believe it is, says, I will walk through the water with you. I'll walk through the flood with you. I won't go over your head. I will walk through the fire. You won't get burned. We know all these verses, right? We've seen them. You don't believe them. At least you don't if you're not investing in these troubled teens. Because that's difficult. That's suffering. That's hard. And here's what typically happens. We see this hard, difficult, terrible thing, and we say, I'm going to do it. God's called me to reach this kid. And we put on our Christian armor, right? And we go marching into battle. Dun, 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 dun. Right? And the kid gives us a dirty look. Well, I'm obviously not the person for the job. God must have somebody else for him. I'll go back to prayer. Onward, Christian. I'm here to help you. Blank, 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 blank. They cuss you out. Well, I've tried. Can I tell you something? God can't walk through the fire with you if you're not in the fire. God can't walk through the storm with you if you're not willing to go to the storm. God can't be in the flood with you if you're scared of water. We've gotten soft as a group. We're soft. We'd much rather witness and minister to our suburbanite, candy-coated kids, the ones who wake up in a Christian house and get out of their Christian bed and go eat Christian cereal, to go to a Christian school, to participate at Christian recess, to go home from Christian daycare, to get home and eat Christian supper and have our Christian devotion with our Christian parents and get back in our Christian bed. We know how to work with those kids all day long. But man, you get outside of that, I'm going to reach the reachable and teach the teachable. I can only do what God allows me to do. Yeah, and He's going to allow you to suffer. And He's going to allow you to be put through the ringer. And He's going to allow you to have your heart stomped on, your back stabbed. And I don't know why we think that when it hurts, we're outside of God's will. When it's difficult, that somehow this is something God's not called us to. That when it's hard, that must be a job for somebody else. This is God telling me to move on. I've done everything I could. Everything you could. 1 Corinthians 11. let's see here. 23. Are they ministers of Christ? I am more, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths more often. Of the Jews, five times I've received 40 stripes, save one. I was beaten with rods, I was stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck, day and night I have... We have never suffered. We've suffered in Avon, seriously? Plainfield? Indy? I don't know. Kokomo? I don't know where so many people are from. Really? You've suffered? No, it hurt. It was uncomfortable. It was awkward. I gave it all I got and nothing came back. Well, that's a myth. It's a myth. It's a myth about youth ministry. I've heard it. I heard it when I was in college. I've heard it since then. Here's the saying that I get told a lot. Youth ministry, you get in it what you put in it. You get out of it what you put in it. You've heard this saying before, right? It's like the hard work ethic. No. It's nothing like that. It's not a scale. I worked this hard, I'll see this much success. Right? It will always cost you more than you think. It'll always hurt more than you expect. Mr. Dean, you sound like you've been hurt. Oh yeah, I live in hurt. Live in it. Like many of you, I go to bed at night and ask myself, did I spend enough time with my kids? Did I spend enough time with my wife? I've got to find 5 minutes to spend with my wife today. Oh, man. Now, I understand that I'm on the extreme scale because my kids live there at the camp with me, okay? But we all have suffered some. But have we suffered all? Have we put it all on the table? Have we given God everything, every second? See, we've committed to serving youth. We've committed to reaching outside of our church family and bringing those people in. That's what an outreach ministry is, okay? And when we reach and get smacked by the world, we tend to not reach as far the next time. Or when we do, we check 1,000 times and reach like this. As opposed to walking out and grabbing kids and pulling them in. We need to be willing to get hurt, smacked, beat down, brutalized. We need to be willing to get emotionally scarred over these kids. If you're not waking up in the morning praying for your kids and going to bed praying for your kids, that's the first thing I invite you to change. You want to invest in them? The investment of prayer is worth more than any other investment you can do. Second only to love, after that is love and time. You've got to spend time with your kids. And I'm not talking about Sunday school time. I'm not talking about teen activity time. I'm talking like get the lunches at schools. I'm talking get in the homes. I'm talking find time, one-on-one prayer. I'm recruiting people to pray for my kids. I walk to my staff and I say, when was the last time you prayed with Corey? When was the last time you prayed with Alex? When was the last time you prayed with Antonio? When was the last time you prayed with... You got to get there. Grab his hand, hand on the shoulder, get down, bow down and pray with him today. You say, you're a mean person to work for. No, I love my kids and I hate sin. I love my kids and I hate sin. I know it's going to cost me. I know it's going to hurt. I know I'm going to have to suffer. We look here. Suffering, I know this is going to sound weird. Suffering is optional. There's a saying in ultra running that says, pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. Now, it's a mindset. Trust me, pain is coming, suffering's coming, right? But I understand the pain is coming in ministry, but I refused to act like I'm suffering through ministry. I'm not suffering. I'm glad I was invited to this race. When your perspective, when your view of the goal is properly aligned, by the way, my brain properly aligned my goal somewhere around 73 miles in the ultra. At about 73 miles, from 50 to 73, I had a really bad time. At 73 miles, I came to an aid station. I looked at my wife and I said, where am I at? And she said, you're running in an ultra marathon. I said, where am I at? Illinois, where am I at? You're at mile 73. And I kid you not, I'm bent over. I can barely stand up. She said 73, and something in my brain said, that's really close to 100. 73 is not close to 100. Not anywhere close. But my brain thought it was. I immediately stood up and went, I'm almost there. I ran the next 27 miles faster than I ran any 27 miles earlier in that race. Why? Because my brain got right. Was I still in pain? Absolutely. I was suffering like you wouldn't believe. People were walking up behind me saying, there's marbles in your calves. That's how cramping they were. They were rolling marbles back there. They could see the cramps in my calves as I was running. I didn't care. I had a goal. I had a vision. I had to get across that finish line. I'm almost there. Right? Can I tell you something? When we understand what success looks like, when we understand the salvation of one kid, when we understand that our job is just to put in time and put in love and let God do the rest, we can go through any kind of suffering, any kind of pain. The problem is we don't believe we can, and so we quit. I've got 30 seconds. There's an old story that says God told this man, look, if you want to do something for me, he said, I'll do anything for you, Lord. He said, I want you to push this rock. He said, God, that rock is huge. It's 10 foot tall, 10 foot round, and millions of pounds. There's no way I can possibly move this rock. He said, I want you to push the rock, push the rock, push the rock. So the guy gets out there in the morning. He pushes and pushes and pushes and pushes. Doesn't move it an inch. He comes up with new ideas, leverage, all kinds of stuff. Sun's pouring down, sweat's dripping off. He's pushing, he's pushing, he's pushing, he's pushing. He finally gets done, rips off his hat, rips off his gloves, throws them in the dirt and says, forget it, God, I'm not getting anywhere. I will not succeed. And God said, what is your problem? He says, I've been pushing this thing forever and I've never moved it an inch. And he says, you weren't called to move it. You were called to push it. And the reason we give up and we don't suffer, the reason we don't invest and we don't mentor, because sometimes the finish line, the success, doesn't happen until these kids are 30, 35 years old and we get really, really tired of losing. You're not losing. You're called to push, not to move. Thank you.